the Cabinet has decided to ramp up preparations for a no-deal Brexit amid uncertainty over the fate of Theresa May's proposed EU exit deal. It allocated to ministers £2 billion set aside in case the UK leaves on the 29th of March without MPs having accepted any deal. Letters, as I was saying, will be sent to 140,000 firms, updating them on what they should do. Meanwhile, 3,500 troops will be put on standby to help government departments. Aidan Connolly is from the Northern Ireland Retail Consortium. Morning to you, Aidan.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. And the former Women's Coalition Assembly member, Jane Morris. Good morning to you, Jane.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. And Sir Bernard Jenkin. Good morning, Sir Bernard.
Good morning.
Good morning. Should people be worried, Sir Bernard, about a no-deal scenario?
Well, I can imagine that some businesses that trade across EU frontiers will be concerned and will want to make preparations and will want to take contingency measures to just comfort themselves that there isn't going to be serious damage to their own business if we leave without an agreement. But for the vast majority of people, you won't notice when we leave the European Union. 95% of businesses in the United Kingdom don't trade with the European Union. And I appreciate that's probably a bit different in Northern Ireland, but most people's lives will, but they won't notice anything on the day we leave the European Union.
Yeah, but will they be noticing on the days after and the weeks and the months after if there is a no deal?
Well, if there is no withdrawal agreement, it's already apparent that the EU is also making preparations for the absence of a withdrawal agreement. They're already making preparations to make sure the planes will fly, that there is an agreement about data. I mean, these are very technical matters. And we will be seeking with the European Union the kind of agreements for trading that they have with most other countries around the world. They would hardly want to treat us much worse than, say, the United States of America or other countries where they don't have a free trade agreement.
Was it not all meant to be so easy, leaving the EU?
Well, it is quite easy to leave the EU if both sides are prepared to cooperate. The question that is in everyone's mind is how belligerent are the EU going to be? But there's already evidence, say, in France, for example, that they've already passed the laws to make sure that they only carry out the most necessary customs checks at Calais, because, of course, they want Calais to remain a competitive port. They want the goods to keep flowing. They don't want Calais to snarl up with a whole lot of people with clipboards checking things that don't need to be checked.
Jane, no need to worry about a no-deal Brexit then. No need to worry at all.
I think it's very obvious that Sir Bernard is talking more about Britain, not Northern Ireland. It would be very, very different in Northern Ireland. When he talked about 95% of businesses don't trade with Europe, I think is what he said. But Ireland is the European Union, and Northern Ireland businesses trade cross-border. So that's something that has to be taken into account. Of course, no deal Brexit would be a disaster. People are talking about a constitutional crisis at the moment. I mean, that's Jeremy Corbyn's words. So it's not just about a no deal. It's a crisis. But the important thing here is we've got to take the pressure.
What happened then?
I'm not too sure, Sir Bernard. Not too sure at all.
Can I just respond to one thing that she was saying? The economy of Northern Ireland trades far more with the rest of GB rather than across the border. About 5% of Northern Ireland's economic production is traded across to the Republic. Most of that is either farm traffic or construction traffic, milk lorries, and Guinness. One company, Guinness, is responsible for quite a large proportion of the trading. This is perfectly manageable. If we leave without a deal, of course, everyone's agreed we don't want a hard border in Northern Ireland, so there won't be infrastructure at the frontier.
Well, let's put that to one of the representatives of business, Aidan Connolly from the Northern Ireland Retail Consortium. Nothing to worry about, Aidan.
Well, the fact that 60% of our goods that go to GB go through the Republic of Ireland is worrying. The fact that 70% of the stuff that we send out from here has ingredients or components that have come from the EU. And more importantly than ever, I suppose he's talking about that GB is our biggest market. And you know what? Sir Bernard is absolutely right. However, what we have is an integrated supply chain. What we have is an integrated market that has not come from the time of the Good Friday Agreement. It's come over this past 40 years. And we in Northern Ireland are simply not in the position to choose either Great Britain or the EU. For us to be successful and for us to keep prices low for consumers, for us to allow business to thrive, we need both markets. And that's quite simply why we need a deal to make sure that we have access to both. Otherwise, on the 29th of March, we are going to see tariffs, we are going to see customs, we are going to see those cost rises that neither business here nor consumers here can afford. On top of that, he's talking about trade deals. And yes, again, he is right. There will be trade deals. However, the average time to get a trade deal is 4 years. Families and businesses here can't afford economic chaos for 4 months, never mind 4 years.
So what do you think is going to happen if there is a no deal Brexit, Aidan?
There will be some things that happen overnight, and those are those sort
like
of bilateral and unilateral treaties on things like aviation, which we need. There will be, very quickly, there will have to be some areas where we have cooperation. However, just in the way that this withdrawal agreement was the stepping stone, the starting point for trade negotiations, we will have to go into trade negotiations with not only the EU, but countries across the world. And you have to remember that over 70% of what we bring into this country has either zero tariffs or preferential tariffs already because we are members of the EU. So we're already starting at a lower starting point just by dropping out.
Well, the DUP MLA, Jim Wells, joining us now. Doesn't sound good. From Aidan, Jim.
Stephen, we are in classic Project Fear in overdrive. What Theresa May is doing and announcing yesterday was a deliberate attempt to try and force people into a position where, in desperation, they would accept her deal, when she knows, of course, it's unacceptable. There are many, many other options apart from a no-deal situation. For instance, Article 50 could be rescinded temporarily. There could be an extension before we actually leave the European Union. And, of course, the obvious thing could happen is that we go back to Europe and say that this deal isn't acceptable. They could go back to the negotiating table and negotiate something more beneficial to all of us.
But Jim, the thing is that we are still talking that we are 100 days today, and the options that are actually on the table at the moment, and as business people, we have to deal in certainties here. So the options that are on the table are either the no deal, which is coming, or this deal, or some version of this deal. So it's not scaremongering, it is not Project Fear. We have seen unilateral movements by the south of Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, to put legislation in place to deal with no deal. We've seen it in France, we're seeing it in Germany. And it's not just the British government that is doing this, and it's not Project Fear. In fact, the government is being responsible about telling people how to prepare.
You know, the government wants to engineer a situation where its backbenchers panic and agree to the worst of all worlds, which is Theresa May's Brexit deal, which no one can accept and will leave Northern Ireland in a terribly difficult situation forever in terms of its trade.
The French government and the government in the Republic of Ireland and the government in Germany, are they trying to get their backbenchers to do the same? It's just not true. The thing is, you can go and you can drive a car without a seatbelt and you might be okay. But the thing is, we do put on our seatbelts because we want to have that security of knowing if something happens, we are protected. And that's simply what the government is doing, Jim.
Yes, but at the choreographing, the announcements are being deliberately portrayed as a situation of Armageddon, the four horses of the apocrypha, plagues of locusts that are going to occur on the 29th of March. Absolute nonsense. What we should have done on the 11th of December is rejected Theresa May's deal, and as soon as that had happened, then Europe would have gone back to the negotiating table, and we all have sat down and negotiated a deal which had avoided any of this panic. This is what's happening, and Europe's acting jointly.
But we are where we are now, Jim, so business is where it is now. What are they going to do next year?
Well, there can be an extension to the process. It doesn't have to be the 29th of March. There can be more time given to sort out the arrangements. But the reality is, this is not what's going on. I mean, and the most pathetic announcement yesterday from Theresa May was that there would be 3,000 troops made available in the event of a no deal. What on earth are those 3,000 troops doing?
Can I come in here, Stephen?
Because yes,
you've got to pick up on Jim's point. This is absolute music to our ears. Jim Wells, I'm assuming under the authority of the DUP, has
said
the process could be... He said the process could be extended. Well, can I say, Arlene Foster should recognise her responsibility to all the people of Northern Ireland, who are all entitled to be European citizens, and call for Article 50 to be either revoked or put on ice. And Jim saying the process is extended is an excellent proposal.
No, there is provision for a temporary, and I mean temporary, a few months of a delay to be implemented, so that if there are issues that still have to be sorted out, that can be done.
This is headline news, Stephen, that Jim is saying this. An extension of Article 50. Is this the first time I've heard it? Bring it on. This could make the pressure off and could be vitally important.
A period of a few months. But, Jane, what we're not going to do is we're not going to be browbeaten into accepting the worst of all deals, which creates a border down the middle of the Irish Sea and basically is a waiting room for constitutional change and change in the status of Northern Ireland. We're not going to do that. But what I'm saying to you...
You're already in the waiting room for constitutional change. It's Brexit has brought that on, and you must realise that.
No,
Brexit
is
much, much more threatening to the constitution of the United Kingdom than the backstop is. And it's the backstop is not the worst of all possible worlds. The no deal isn't by far the worst of all possible worlds.
You must recognise that.
Any sane person must.
Have you heard one person in the DUP, in fact, one person in Northern Ireland demanding a no deal hard Brexit? Nobody's opting for that. Nobody wants that. And there's absolutely no reason why that should occur. But they're trying to scare the Conservative dissidents and the DUP into accepting the worst of all deals by all these threats of 3,000 troops being mobilised on March the 29th. Absolute nonsense. What on earth are 3,000 troops going to be doing on March the 29th?
You seem to be focusing on these 3,500 troops, Jim, when the real thing here is the preparations that need to be made by businesses and even your own constituency to be ready for the changes that will come on the 29th of March whenever we lose cooperation on telecommunications, trade remedies, civil judicial cooperation, on data flow, driver licensing.
And the planes won't fly. You know, I mean,
No. You obviously weren't listening to what I said earlier on. Very quickly, there will be some things that happen overnight, such as a bilateral aviation, because we know that we need that overnight. But as far as a trading relationship, Jim, that can't be done overnight. That needs to be talked out in the round. That needs to make sure that we don't go to WTO tariffs on that first day, on the 29th of March, when that piece of camembert on your cheese board after your Christmas dinner will be 30% dearer. The same, around the same on things like meat products, which we get from the continent. And as well as that, even the shirt on your back will be 14% dearer. And that's before we come to non-tariff barriers, which can be up to 29% of food and drink. Now,
yes.
I don't know about you, but I know my own family here cannot afford to see those price rises. I know that our businesses and our members of our businesses cannot afford to see those rises for 4 months, never mind the 4 years it takes on average to get a trade deal. So
and
this is not scaremongering, Jim.
Do you think that Europe has a £90 billion trade deficit with the United Kingdom? Are we going to allow any of that to happen? What we need here is clarity. We need the meaningful vote to occur at Westminster for a very clear decision to be made by our MPs that the current deal is unacceptable. That will immediately provoke Europe to get round the negotiating table again, because they need us as well. It seems not to their advantage to go for a hard Brexit either. And sense will prevail once we get clarity. The problem is, at the moment, we haven't got clarity, and Europe is trying to cajole us into accepting the worst of all
deals. You have had 2 years to come up with a better deal, and you haven't done it. We are now counting down to 100 days, and whether or not Europe has the best intentions, or we have the best intentions not to have a no deal, We are where we are, and we have to be realistic about this. Let's stop the unicornology. Let's stop the land of hope and glory. Everything's going to be fine. They need us as much as we need them. Let's look at exactly what is going to happen on the
table. Here's Tom in Banbridge. Let me bring in Tom. Morning, Tom.
Good morning, Stephen.
Go ahead, Tom.
Since I come on the telephone here, there's a load of things I'd love to talk about.
Well, let's do it.
I'll keep it simple. The gentleman that talks about the disaster and the crisis, that's all you hear. They stop there. Why don't they explain what the disaster they think is going to be and what the crisis is going to be and take out the buts, the maybes, and all the negative things away and think about £14 billion extra in the coffers to do health service and all that sort of thing. But the main thing is the crisis and the disaster.
So do you think, when you hear the likes of Aidan Connolly, director of the Northern Ireland Retail Consortium, do you think he's making up the fears of his members?
Well, let him explain it.
Aidan?
I have explained it. On the 29th of March, if we have no deal, we go to WTO tariffs. That's World Trade Organization.
What's wrong with that?
That means the piece of beef on your plate is 43% dearer. The cheese is around 30% dearer. As well as that, we lose cooperation on things like data flow, driver licensing. I haven't used the word crisis, and I haven't used the word disaster on this.
Still be.
What I have done is to explain and to give the facts about what is going to happen on the 29th of March, unless, and I've even said that there will be unilateral and bilateral deals on things like aviation, but on trade, that's going to take a while. So what I have to deal with here, representing our members, talking on behalf of business, is what the certainty
is. Well, there he spelled it out to you, Tom. That's his worry.
No, not at all. That's silly. What happens if it doesn't go up 30%?
I will gladly...
Jane Morris. Yeah, Jane.
Can I come in?
52 years, mate.
Okay.
I think I know a wee bit about what I'm talking about.
All right, well, have a listen to Jane.
Say that I think, I'm assuming the government knows a wee bit about what it's talking about when it gets the prepares the troops, and we're apparently being told not to book holidays beyond March 29th. You know, surely, maybe.
Come on, Jane, that's scare tactics, isn't it? Do you seriously think we're not going to be able to fly to Magaluf beyond March?
We're going to be able to fly to Magaluf, but there are going to be changes in the way we do things in terms of visas for entry into EU countries. But all of this is, I don't want to scaremonger. It's what the government is saying. They're not going to put thousands of troops
What will these troops be doing?
Don't ask me. I have no idea.
Well, you're quoting the troops. You're quoting the troops. What will they be doing?
I'm quoting what the government has announced this morning, and I think they possibly have more detail about this than any of us do. So I think it's not scaremongering. There's a simple answer to calm the process down is to either put Article 50 on ice or extend it, just as Jim Wells has said. We must do that. The only problem about that is that we've got the European elections on May the 24th, and so we've got, if we go beyond that, are we going to stand
In terms of delaying, Theresa May says we're leaving on the 29th, Jim Wells, but then again, she said that the meaningful vote was going to definitely happen, and it was delayed. There would be no election, and guess what? There was an election. So,
and she said that definitely, even the morning of the 11th of December, she was saying there will be a meaningful vote. Indeed, she sent all her troops out onto the media to tell people like yourself there would be a vote. What happened? There wasn't. And this is the problem. There's a lack of credibility now in some of what Theresa May says. And I would just love to know what on earth those 3,000 troops will be doing on March the 30th. I haven't a clue, and neither does she. Stephen, also, could I ask...
See this lack of credibility, by the way, Jim?
Well, she certainly, with some of her statements...
Don't forget then that when the DUP had a decision to make there the other day, all of a sudden they wouldn't vote against Theresa May in a vote of no confidence.
Yeah,
all of a sudden the bluff was called with the DUP, and you blinked.
We have no intention of promoting a Jeremy Corbyn government.
There you go. So therefore, you can wobble and you can wibble and you do it if you want. Yeah. But actually, Theresa May knows that you're not going to go with Corbyn.
Yes, we're not going to prompt unless and until she tries to push through the worst of all deals, which is her Brexit deal. Once she does that, then it's a totally different situation. But as long as that deal's off the table, as it were, we will not be voting against her on a vote of no confidence. Could I just ask Mr. Connolly something? Where did he vote at the referendum in June 2016? Is he like so many other people who are sore losers, they lost the referendum, and now they're trying to paint the worst possible scenario when we do leave Europe? What did he vote, yes or no, on June 16th, 2016?
If you're calling people sore losers and you're making personal attacks, you've lost the argument already.
Well, what way did you vote?
Secondly,
what way did you vote,
I am on this programme, right? And you're making this very personal.
You voted Remain.
No one else has. I am here representing the Northern Ireland Retail Consortium. I am representing their views. And therefore, which way I vote, if in fact I did vote is completely and utterly irrelevant.
No, it's not.
Because
all those scaremongers are people who voted Remain and who are losers.
So you think he should be open about the way he voted, Jim?
He should, yes.
Yeah, and he's not an elected representative. What way did Simon Hamilton vote?
I don't know. He hasn't revealed another Mr. Connolly.
He hasn't revealed.
Hamilton's not on.
What, a former DUP... finance minister didn't reveal how he voted about Europe, about the EU. He wouldn't be drawn.
He's not on the
do you criticise Simon Hamilton for not revealing it?
It's entirely up to Simon Hamilton.
But it's not entirely up to Aidan.
Yes, but Aidan.
A little bit of double speak
here.
Not
on spreading gloom and doom this morning, which Aidan is. Now, Aidan, what way did you vote?
What way did Simon vote?
I don't know, Stephen.
Because he won't tell anybody.
Oh, another one, Mr. Connolly. But Mr. Connolly is the one spreading gloom and doom this morning. What way did he vote in June 16th?
Jim Morris.
Could we, instead of going for what Jim calls the worst of all possible deals, could we take time and could we go for a people's vote? And that is not another referendum. It's a preferendum where we can choose between the three. And that we need more time to do that and then get a people's vote. And the momentum for a people's vote is definitely gaining ground now as people are changing their mind and more young people are coming onto the register. And I'm sure we would get a much higher Remain vote in Northern Ireland.
Well, Jane, at least we know where you voted. You've been very open.
I'm proud to say I voted to remain.
And you're totally honest about it, and I appreciate that. But, Jane, the problem is technically it is absolutely impossible for there to be what you call a people's vote or a preference vote before March.
Explain why. It requires
an act of parliament to start.
Well, therefore, it's not impossible.
It is impossible, Stephen. Technically, I'm totally against it, but it just simply cannot be held before March the 29th because it requires an act of Parliament. It also requires liaison with the Electoral Commission to decide the wording of the...
Okay.
To be fair, Jim is right on this one. It does take, one, an act of Parliament. Two, they've actually worked it out that it would take 5 months, so it would need an extension of Article 50. However, the EU has, over the recent weeks, indicated that if there was something like a people's vote or something like a change of government or a substantial change, is the wording they use, then they would be willing to extend Article 50, but only under those sort of circumstances.
Here's John in Belfast. Morning, John.
How you doing? Aidan's guard tactics, and should be all concerned. I think we all should be concerned. But when you listen to people talking about guard tactics, you know, we've got the Hollies companies who are all panicking. We've got people in England, factories in England, who are looking for storage space. Some factories can only get storage space 100 miles away from their plant, which is not good for them either. We have the National Health Service who's booking space on the ferries to bring over drugs. We have roads that could be closed out for at the beginning of the lorry car park. We had the head of the IMF telling us it was a bad deal. We had the governor of the Bank of England tell us it's not a good deal. And we've had the head of the World Trade Organization telling Britain that if you join the organization...
That's just not true. For example, Mark Carney, the governor of the Bank of England, did not say this is not a good deal.
Mark Carney did say it.
No, he didn't. He gave different forecasts and projections. Oh, sorry, I stand corrected.
But as I say, none of them were very good, so they weren't. You know, so as I say, everybody and their dog must be involved in these scare tactics that Jim Wells talks about. They all can't be wrong.
Okay, Dan and Lisburn. Morning, Dan.
Stephen, thank you very much for having me on your show.
Who do you want to talk to?
I want to speak to Mr. Connolly.
Yes.
Mr. Connolly, you say we're...
Say good morning to him at least.
Pardon?
Say good morning to him at least.
Hello?
Good morning.
Hello, Mr. Connolly. Mr. Connolly, you say tariffs are on the way. Mr. Connolly, in the past 6 years, we have sent £15 billion worth of tariffs to the European Union. Mr. Connolly, you're worried about your Columbine cheese. No, probably your foie gras too. But the people in Northern Ireland are worried about bread, butter and jam. And Mr. Connolly, Let's get to the point, Dan. Let's get to the point. The fact is that we already pay loads of tariffs, including 12.5% on clothes, 12.5% on shoes, which are imported from outside the European Union. Mr. Connolly wants to do a protective wall round our farmers, round the businesses, and we will be linked to VAT.
Okay.
And the rest of Europe, we will have...
If I can respond to you on the tariffs, yes, we do pay tariffs. But the thing is, once we leave Europe and we go to WTO, those tariffs can be double, treble, or quadruple, depending on what the item is. And the reason why we have lower tariffs, 70% of the stuff, and I used camembert and beef as an example, but I hate to tell you, there are very few banana farms or orange farms in Lincolnshire or in Belfast. The thing is, we do need food that comes from both the EU and from further afield in the EU. Okay. And we already have lower tariffs because we are EU members.
Mr. Dan, thank you. Here's Mr. Kieran in Limavady. Good morning, Kieran.
Good morning, Stephen.
Yes.
First of all, I want to pick up on Jim Wells, what he said. Good morning, Jim. Hello?
Hello, yes. Oh. Good to hear from you again.
Not so bad, Jim. Thank you very much. I just wanted to say, you said a word there, credibility, about Theresa May and that. Tell me this, has your party credibility? Have got any credibility? I heard another revelation this morning about Gregory Campbell not knowing about 486,000...
Hold on a minute. No, I'm not across that. We'll not be getting into details about what Gregory did or didn't know, and I'm sure Gregory knows everything about everything. Jane Morris?
Yes, it's madness what we're doing at the moment. Total madness, and people, especially for Northern Ireland. I mean, I've said many times, and people know very well where I stand. Brexit is bad for Northern Ireland. The backstop is better for Northern Ireland, but the best for Northern Ireland is no Brexit at all. And if we have to get there by a people's vote or a referendum and extending Article 50, everything is possible. Where there's a will, there's a way. And the people, look at the queues of people who stood getting Irish passports. Surely that's something we should talk about. The people of Northern Ireland, as citizens, will all be entitled to be Europeans after March 29th. There's the issue we should be talking about. Obviously, trade and borders is important, but what about people? It's much more important. What's going to happen to people who don't take on Irish passports? And do their kids not be entitled to Erasmus exchange? You know, does everyone have to get an Irish passport in order to stay European? And that's something I want to ask Jim.
Well, first of all, Jane, I'll not be applying for an Irish passport.
Why not?
The worst that apparently can happen is in a few years' time, I may have to pay £6 for an electronic visa to travel to various parts of Europe. But remember this, Jane, The vast bulk of the Spanish and Portuguese tourist market depends upon the British market. They're not going to do anything to slow that down or to make it more difficult. £90 billion worth of goods, more worth of goods come from Europe to the UK than leave the UK to Europe. German manufacturers, wine manufacturers, they're all going to make deals to ensure that that trade continues. Europe needs us more than we need them. Secondly, there are wonderful opportunities
for
British manufacturers to come in and to take the markets which may otherwise be curtailed by restrictions and imports. There's wonderful opportunities here for British trade.
Etienne, reply.
Let's get back to people, and let's get back particularly to our young people. Because at the moment, as members of the European Union, we all have rights to live, work, travel and retire in any EU country. Those rights are being stripped of us as a result of Brexit, unless we retain our European citizenship with Irish passports. But I believe that we, all of Northern Ireland, are still entitled to be European citizens according to the Good Friday Agreement. You cannot strip our young people of the opportunities they have in the European Union. You're taking away our rights. And that's something which is much more important, I believe, not necessarily in economic terms, but in other terms, to people of Northern Ireland, especially our young people who want to be able to live, work, and our elderly who want to stay, to retire to the cost of
living. But Jim, that's nonsense. That deal's been done already. Anyone living in the European Union is a bit of citizenship. Has British citizenship can stay already, and anyone from Europe who's working and living in Northern Ireland and has done for the last 5 years.
She's talking about future generations.
I'm not talking about a European citizen from continental Europe. I'm talking about Northern Ireland citizens. I'm talking about our young people.
But that deal has been agreed. There's no issue there, well, as far as people living in Europe or vice versa. And as far as the future is concerned, quite simply, if someone can prove that their skills are needed within the United Kingdom, they'll be welcome to stay, or if they can prove that they're coming to a job that pays £130,000 a year.
Final word to you, Jim.
Please, Stephen, that Jim has definitely got this wrong, and I'm not going to accuse him of anything, just, I think, a misunderstanding of the situation. Our rights are being removed, our European rights to live, travel and work. This is freedom of movement for us in Northern Ireland. This is something people don't realise. They wanted to put up barriers to freedom of movement from EU citizens coming to us. But what about us as EU citizens going there? And these rights are now being denied. And why? I cannot understand why Jim doesn't see that.
Okay. All right. Jim, thank you. We've got to leave it there. Jim Wells, thank you very much indeed. Aidan Connolly, thank you.